Good morning and welcome to this episode of Under the Helmet. Well, the Eastern Wisconsin Slayers won their first game going away versus longtime perennial rival, the Manitowoc County Mariners. To discuss that win and to preview the game upcoming versus the Brown County Blackjacks, we have Connor Roddy, the head coach of the
Eastern. We played the Ravens this week.
Sorry. Oh, we played the Ravens this week. Sorry, we played the Ravens.
Yeah.
We are here with Connor Roddy, head coach of the aforementioned Eastern Wisconsin Slayers. Good morning, Connor. How are you?
Good. How are you doing, Terry?
Oh, boy. I am good. Now, one of the things, looking back at the Mariners game, when you go into Two Rivers, what's that feeling like knowing that you have played on that field or played in that town and just memories of the past?
Well, a lot of the memories aren't good, I'll say that. Going back, you know, so many years with the Mariners and only having a couple wins against them, and every game has been fought tooth and nail. There's never been an easy game for us. And, you know, going against a great organization like the Mariners, going against a great owner like Marcos, you know that they're always going to come with their best possible game. They're never disorganized. They're never, you know, out of contention. They're never confused. They're always organized on the field. They always are team players. And that's like one of the toughest things that, you know, to deal with just in general. It's like, you know, you can be physically superior to another team or more talented or whatever you want to think, but at the end of the day, the team that's, you know, more organized and better put together and has more team players is going to win.
Now, when the game started and you're looking across and you see the disparity in depth and numbers, did you know earlier that this would play a vital role into the outcome of this game?
Yeah, absolutely. The lack of numbers can plague any team. I've been on teams like that. The number one thing, though, is just the 11 that's on the field. The numbers will always play a factor in the game. But if your best 11's out there and they're better than the other 11, you're going to win that game. So, you know, it's an advantage that you want to have in your mind, and it's an advantage that you want to, you know, capitalize on. And I had mentioned it to a couple guys before that linemen are the premier currency in semi-pro on both sides of the ball. I mean, between, you know, defensive and offensive linemen, the big guys are where the game is truly won in the trenches. And on both sides of the ball, they're so rare in semi-pro. So looking at the other side, I know some of their guys are going to be going both ways, especially some of their premier defensive players. In my opinion, the best players on that team are on that defensive line. And to see some of those guys going both ways, I know that we can rotate our guys pretty frequently and take advantage of the fact that those other guys don't come out of the game. And I don't care how good of shape you're in, a 60-minute football game is a long time to play.
They always say that fatigue makes cowards of us all. Now, offensively speaking, because we're gonna jump into all three facets of the game, yep. Offensively speaking, when you saw the offense start to click and you saw the timing, you saw things start to work, was the offense what you expected in this game, or was it more of like a surprise that things seemed like they were firing all cylinders?
It was definitely a surprise to see us stumble early. The offense has been working really hard in practice and working hard together to click early. And, you know, everybody's got a game plan in mind. You know, everybody's got a game plan until they get punched in the mouth. And that's what happened to us early in the game. I mean, in the first, you know, 7 minutes of the game, we had a pick six. We had an ejection. There was issues with the refs. It was a really bad way to start the game. And it definitely was on, you know, both sides of the ball. I would say more so offense. They were struggling. But with just the ferocity, the offense just came together. We worked it out on the sideline. And we all started working together as a team, and it showed. I mean, you know, the offense took off. It was led by a couple big playmakers. But the biggest thing was that the offensive line just came together and worked and figured it out. And, you know, Flash did a really good job leading his guys in the huddle. And we all came together on it big time, and we worked really hard as a coaching staff and as an offensive unit to put together and salvage what we could in the beginning and then really take off in the second half.
between Flash and guys like Kent Ridgeway, for those who don't know, Kent Ridgeway, he perhaps produced one of, or suffered one of the most gruesome and grotesque leg injuries I have ever seen. His x-ray looked like somebody put a hand grenade in his shoe. His leg, this was a few years ago, and he worked himself back into playing shape. He worked himself back into getting in the gym, and if you follow him on social media, he's always either at the gym or eating wings, and I'm cool with either one of those. What does it mean to have a player of his determination?
It means a lot. Me and Kent go way back. So on a personal level, I mean, me and him went to high school together. So he's one of the original guys that, you know, introduced me to the world of semi-pro, and, you know, me and him have known each other for forever. And when he suffered that leg injury, me and him worked really hard to get him back to, you know, playing shape. And I took a super small role in his recovery, but, you know, to see anybody battle from that inspires the guys around you. And, you know, not every player makes it back from something like that. There's a lot of guys I know who have suffered injuries that are less gruesome than that one, and they just retired on the spot. They're done. So for him to battle back from that, it takes a special kind of person, and that's absolutely going to inspire the guys around him. And, you know, it's nice, too, because he's not the only guy on the offensive line who inspires that kind of leadership and that kind of play. I mean, you know, I feel that any one of our linemen, you can pull him out and plug him in another offensive line, and he'll be a leader.
One of the things also about Kent, like I said, he's just, you know, just his infectious behavior as far as working in the offseason. He worked himself to get back into shape, and like you said, along the offensive line, that's where the set and the tone is. Even at receiver, you have your Damaris Scott, your Antonio Fontenot. Funny, one of the first games I saw in the old league with the Slayers was Antonio Fontenot ran a kickback, and he was super young. And it's weird to see this dude who was super young back then actually, like, still looks the exact same, but still, presents big playability. How has Tony over the years matured, and now that you see him as a veteran Slayer?
When I first started playing with Antonio a long time ago, we played together in the Mayhem, and he was super young in the game, so was I, and we're both kind of figuring it out, at least in the world of semi-pro, and he just kind of had all the potential in the world. He just had all these physical gifts, and people just kind of gravitate around that. And he's a super fun-loving dude. He's an awesome energy to have on the sideline. And in years past, any kind of receiver wants the ball, you know, and that was a big priority for him, is being out there so that way he can make plays. And he was always a team player, but as the years have gone on, his determination to win games has superseded everything. I've seen him play on other teams and take role player roles. I've seen him step up in a starting quarterback position. He's willing to do whatever it takes to help his team win the game. And, you know, that's kind of a rare attribute to find. I mean, you know, a lot of guys know what they're worth and they want, you know, their piece of the pie at their position. And Tony's just one of those guys that you can kind of plug and play anywhere and he's going to make an impact for you.
Now, looking at the defensive line as one of the strengths of the Slayers, you have a phenomenal rotation. You have depth and talent everywhere. You have players like Antonio Dundee. You have Carlos Ratliff. Guys like this who are veterans, but they still have elite talent to sit there and get the job done. How difficult is it for veterans to actually still play at a high level year after year after year?
I find it tough for veterans to play in a long season. I think that game to game, you can get an all-star game out of true vets. Like, you know, Carlos is definitely the prime example for that. He's a vet who's been in the game a super long time. You know, definitely no offense to him, but he's kind of up there in age. But the thing is that his technique is always flawless. Mm-hmm. He has a nonstop motor. And as you get older in the game of semi-pro, you have the humbleness to admit when you're not needed in the game at that moment, when you have a big lead, when it's late in the game, when you know that you're not playing at 100%, you're playing at 80%, you're more willing to come out. I mean, when you're younger, all you want to do is just play. All you want to do is be on the field. In my years of semi-pro, there was never a moment I ever missed going on the field. If we ever needed anything, special teams, whatever, I was out there. And, you know, the vets start to realize at a certain point, hey, when I'm at 80%, it's not the same as, you know, a guy coming off the bench who's 100%. And that's, you know, a humbleness that not a lot of guys have for somebody who plays at his caliber. And the beauty of it is that he isn't the only one. We have a ton of guys who are like that, who know that the guys behind them can eat, that the guys behind them can come in and step up. And it's not even, hey, it's the guys behind them, it's the guys next to them. All the way through the line, they all know that they're dogs and that they're willing to go out there and, you know, dominate this offensive line. And they're all willing to work together as a team. And that's the thing that's truly special. It isn't even the talent level that we have on the defensive line. It's the fact that they're all willing to work together as a unit and make sure that everybody's able to get in and get their piece.
It's interesting that you mentioned Carlos's technique, because after watching film, you're right. It's one of the things in semi-pro on a large level, no matter what league, no matter what area, what region of the country, you see a very grating, like a irksome lack of technique from talent, especially on the defensive line. But Carlos actually uses his hands very well and gets clean quickly and never stops moving. Do you think in the years going forward that technique will make a comeback?
Yeah, I think it never left in the nuances of the game. I think that when you look at guys who are super physically dominant, guys like Malcolm Love, for example, or John Green, they're so physically dominant to their opponent. They know when they have the physical advantage over somebody and they can just blow by them. But whenever they face any kind of talent that's up to their level, the technique comes out and they call on it when they need to. And it is flawless and it's absolutely proven. And I was a player at one point who didn't have a lot of physical talent and all I focused on was technique. We have a team filled with guys who have both, who have the physical talent, who have the technique and the years of experience. And guys like that, you know, come in and they focus so hard on perfecting their craft that when they're dominating somebody's opponent, that, you know, they dominate their opponent, a lot of people think, oh, well, they're just playing nobodies. They're playing trash. They're playing, you know, guys who are inferior to them. When in all actuality, that's how good they are. Their opponent is good. Their opponent does work on their craft. Our guys just work on their craft harder, and they proved it on Saturday.
When we come back from break, I want to preview the game this week and get your thoughts on the NFL draft. You are listening to the Under Helmet Podcast on the FPC Radio Network. We are back with the Under Helmet Podcast here on Spirit Conorati. Connor, when you look at Saturday, what do you think the opponent brings that maybe the Mariners didn't? Like, what is the major point of emphasis?
I think that the number one thing that they have the capability to bring would be numbers. One of the things that if people aren't from the area, they don't understand is that the Ravens, the Blackjacks, and the Mariners are all in very close proximity, and they pull from a pretty small player pool size. So one of the teams is just naturally going to be more dominant than the rest. And if one team suffers greatly, like the Mariners, for example, who suffered a huge loss of numbers this year, naturally the other two teams are going to get stronger. So with the Ravens, I feel that with their surplus of numbers, our strategy from last week has to change immensely. And it already has, but we definitely need to do more and be prepared that, hey, we're not just going to tire these guys out and pull away in the second half. We have to beat them technique-wise, technically-wise, strategy-wise. We have to beat them in all three phases of the game in order to pull out this win.
Now, when you look at the schedule in its ever-evolving shape, when you see changes that happen Is it more of you keep an eye out on the schedule to make sure that it doesn't change again and you kind of adjust, or do you just say, we're going to do what we're going to do and the schedule changes?
It's definitely one of those things where the attitude of the team and the attitude of every coach on the coaching staff and the attitude of the owners is whoever lines up across from us this week is going to get it. As simple as that. We're always focused on the next game.
Now, if we spin towards the NFL draft, as a Patriot backer, you have Jarrett Stidham, you have Cam Newton. There was word that you wanted to trade back for Jimmy Garoppolo. Mac Jones. Now, here's the thing. You watch just as much college football as I do. Do you think that Mac Jones' success at Alabama is a product of his talent or that surrounding talent that was just otherworldly and tremendously elite?
I think that the way that you got to look at it is you got to look at talent in the past that has come out of Alabama. When you look at quarterbacks who have come out of there, like Tua, for example, or A.J. McCarron, for example, if you go that far back, a lot of the guys who come out in this period of dominance by Alabama really don't pan out on the teams that are not as well coached or not as well built. The adversity is a huge part of the game in the NFL. And, you know, at the end of the day, who really knows what's going to happen? There's so many different factors in it. But the situation that he's coming into is great for him. He's coming into a situation where the offense has been rebuilt. He's almost surrounded by a great coaching staff. He's going to be able to sit for a year or at least sit for a number of games. And I think that it's a very nurturing spot for him to be taken. And I there's all this talk about him being smart and all that or whatever. The only thing I want him to do is just stay out of trouble off the field and just focus on the playbook and try and get it down.
If you look at the AFC in general, you have the Ravens, you have the Steelers, who are always a threat. You have the Titans, of course, the Chiefs. Now, we're both in Wisconsin, and we both don't cheer for the Packers, and we're about to have some laughs. Aaron Rodgers is traded from Green Bay to, say, Denver, two-part question. How much trouble do you think this team is in as far as being able to return to the playoffs? And does that make Denver, with their young core, a threat in the AFC?
You got to look at the impact that a veteran quarterback like Rodgers would have on a team like that. They're young, they're talented, they have a ton of pieces, they have a pretty decent defense, and what he would bring to that. Now, we both know, anybody who understands football at all knows, the Rodgers covers up a lot of holes in the Green Bay offense. A lot of people say, oh, well, you have Pro Bowl linemen and, you know, Pro Bowl receivers and yada, yada. There are better linemen and better receivers.
Mm-hmm.
Rodgers is what makes them look good. They wouldn't be getting looked at all. You think Aaron Jones is a top three back? Part of that is because the defense plays so soft because they're afraid Rodgers is going to throw deep.
Mm-hmm.
That's part of it. You know, all of it is affected by it. You take Rodgers out of that scenario and you force, you know, Aaron Jones to run the ball 30 times a game, you're not going to get even close to the same production. And that's what a lot of people don't really seem to understand about Rodgers and the whole equation. You pull him out of there and you plug him in a team like Denver, I think that they have increased success, but I will admit they're not as well of a built team as Green Bay, for example. And who knows if he clicks with, you know, the coaching staff and ownership and things like that. But the number one thing is that he is going to be pissed off no matter what happens. And that is a dangerous man to piss off. Mm-hmm. I mean, just on a team he wasn't even happy with. He was pissed off at Green Bay this entire year, has an MVP season. What do you think he's going to try to do when he goes somewhere else? Now, how do I feel like it affects the playoff bracket? I think it affects New England greatly because, in my mind, I still don't see them winning the AFC East. I feel like the Bills are still too good of a team. They drafted pretty well, in my opinion, and they've assembled a great roster, and I still think that they're going to win the East. So it forces New England into this, you know, this wild card madness that is going on, you know, in the AFC. And I think between, like you said, like the Ravens, Steelers, you look at possibly Denver if they were to pick up Aaron Rodgers, you know, the Chiefs in that mix as well. It just definitely makes it a lot tougher to look at the Patriots and say, hey, we're going to 100% go to the playoffs this year.
Last question, two-part. Who's the one player that was drafted in this draft that you see based on film and just based on your opinion is a can't-miss defender?
Man, that's tough. You know, I'm a Notre Dame boy, so I got to say Owusu, but the issue is that he fell so far, and a lot of it's the undersized part of him. But, I mean, there are plenty of undersized guys in the NFL that, you know, end up being great. I mean, Buda Baker, for example, you know, Miles Jack. You know, I think Owusu coming out, he fell so hard that if they literally get any kind of production out of him, he's going to be a steal. And I think that, you know, that pick in the second round by Cleveland, it fits their defense perfectly. It's the little piece that they need. It's a team that's already primed for success, a team that's most likely going to make the playoffs. And I think that he's going to be a product of that success as well. And it's going to make his life a lot easier. So I think he's definitely going to be probably the best steal defensive-wise in the draft.
Now, as the proud parent of an emerging Cleveland Browns fan, of the Joe Thomas jersey.
Yep.
What do you think his next jersey should be?
Oh, man. Well, you know, Grandpa's the one who keeps getting him all these Browns jersey and his uncles. You know, he's got a Nick Chubb jersey. He's got a Baker Mayfield jersey. He's got, you know, a Joe Thomas jersey. I'm not dying to get him another one from the Browns, but if I absolutely had to, it'd probably be a Jarvis Landry jersey, man. I love the way he plays the game. He brings ferociousness to the receiver position. You know, it's kind of hard to argue with that.
Now, does the little guy's fandom of Cleveland sports, does that transfer to the Cavs, the Indians, and Ohio State?
No, I mean, you got to look at me. I was born in Wisconsin, and I'm a, you know, Patriot fan and a Red Sox fan and, you know, a Notre Dame fan. So I think it's more in the blood, so we'll kind of see where he goes.
Because, I mean, I'm expecting that man to wear a Brewers jersey one of these days.
I don't know if it's going to be that. I mean, his grandmother is a diehard Brewers fan, so I'm sure he'll have something on at some point, but I don't know if it's going to stick.
I was born in Connecticut. I'm a Mets fan, a Raiders fan, and my son has a Green Bay Packer sweatshirt, and he wore it the other day. And my daughter, I posted a picture. She's been a Khalil Mack fan since she was a child. She's like 7. And when he left, she will still watch the Raiders, but she will root for him. Like, that's her guy. So now she has a Khalil Mack jersey. And it is awkward when they're going to play. He knows very little about football, but he knows about the Packers. And she is if the Bears defense is on the field, nothing else matters. Nothing. I have seen her, like, sit through a meal. Nope. We're going to wait till this series is over, and then she's going to eat that food, and that is her guy. And taking that jersey off of her is almost a fight. Like, she wants to wear it to school every day. You can't wear this every day. Like, I literally wash it a couple times a week. You can't wear this every day. You can't. Like, you wore it Monday, and it's only Wednesday. No. So I have to hide it. But can you tell the people what time the game is on Saturday and where – if it's going to be televised or streamed?
It is at 2 o'clock on Saturday. We are at, I forgot the name of the elementary school. It is not Walsh Field, though. The game has been moved. But it should be streamed by Zielinski Sports. And if not, definitely catch another NFL game on Zielinski Sports.
There you go, head coach Connor Roddy. Good luck to you. And we hope the Slayers keep on doing it and pull it together and make that road to the championship. This has been another episode of the Unhelmed Podcast. Be good to yourselves. Be good to each other.